for your mean, mean pride.
Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky, and let's go right to our VIP line, State Senator Greg Brophy. Welcome to the show, Greg. Thanks for taking time out of your Sunday to be with us.
Thanks for having me on.
So there's lots to talk about, but just to make sure we don't run out of time, let's talk about redistricting first. And can you please explain to me and our listeners how it happens that the Democrats in the state Senate come up with some kind of redistricting map and then filibuster their own map?
That was the strangest thing I've ever seen. I have no idea what the tactical decision was that led them to do that. It made no sense to me, but they refused to vote on their own map and purposefully ran the clock out on it so that it would die. And I can't figure out what it was they were trying to accomplish unless they just didn't want to put on record a bunch of senators voting for a junky map.
I still don't. So now what? Is it definitely going to the courts, or what happens now?
You know, we could come back in a special session and do it in a special session. I think all along that the Democrats have been planning to go to court. And I say that based on a whole series of actions that when you look back at them, you say, yeah, it's likely that that's where they were headed. Now, it's possible some of these things are coincidental, but the probability of four or five of these types of events being coincidental is about nil. To wit, last year they passed a bill that redefined what it was the courts would have to take into account if the courts were to draw the new map for the state of Colorado. That was about this time last year, a very late bill that was introduced on April 15th and rammed through in the last 3 weeks of the session. And then early this year, there were a whole bunch of indications that now looking back on them, I can see without question that they were planning to draw those radical maps that they first came out with, the map that put Grand Junction and Boulder in the same district and split the eastern plains of Colorado and did all kinds of crazy things with the, including Highlands Ranch and with Colorado Springs, for instance. I mean, you could tell, looking back, you could tell that the setup testimony that they encouraged to come, we've talked about this before, that they encouraged to come to the public hearings were directed to lay the groundwork for that type of a map. And then ultimately they also tipped off Colorado Polls, the blog website, to start ginning up support for a district that spanned southern Colorado from west to east, and then ultimately they introduced a map like that. So I'm positive that they were planning that all along. Now, it's still possible that somebody who has to pay for the court action or the folks who would be affected by the court action might get cold feet and decide to come back and pick up part of a loaf instead of going all the way through the court system. We'll see. That's possible. If they did that, we would ultimately end up with an agreement before we would be called back for a special session and come back with, and in 3 days, pass a map that basically ratifies the agreement that could be reached by both sides ahead of time. But I think it's most likely just going to go to court.
I mean, if these Democrats didn't want to be on record voting for that outrageous map, then it's very unlikely that Hickenlooper would want to do anything that puts them on record to vote for an outrageous map. And producer Matt said that John Hickenlooper has already said he doesn't have an interest in a special session. So it sounds like that the special session probably wouldn't happen.
Yeah, again, we won't have a special session unless there's an agreement before the special session is even called between the both sides.
So what do you think the chances are that the Democratic thinking was, let's draw the most radical map we can and force it to the courts and hope that the courts split the difference, and that therefore drawing this, you know, we know we're not going to get our map, but if we draw something really crazy, you know, maybe we'll get something better for us than we would otherwise have gotten because the court will try to just split the baby.
I think that's, I think you've hit upon their strategy. And if that works, then we screwed up on our side by not coming in with something much more egregious into a way that favors Republicans. Instead, we came in with an honest, good faith effort to try to reach a compromise with these guys because, you know, frankly, we're afraid of going to court and know that we do the best working in public with all of the people. But I think they're banking on finding an activist judge that'll draw a map closer to the original ones that they submitted.
Tell us a little bit about the efforts by Republicans to get the map drawing process and discussion into public view and how the Democrats reacted.
Well, we kept calling for it. I got to tell you, we were trying to work with the Democrats on the redistricting committee from the early part, discussing, you know, what do you guys look for? What do you think? What about this county? What about that county? And they kind of stonewalled us, which was disconcerting. And then when we got into the public hearing toward the end of the second to last one, Representative Ballmer just called for that. Let's start with a clean slate. Let's throw a empty map up there and start putting things on the map that matter to all of us. And they flat refused to do that. And so I tried again, probably half a dozen times in the last meeting that we had, to get them to do that. And then finally in, the second to last, that was the redistricting committee hearings. In the second to last hearing where the bills were actually being heard, I made the exact same offer to Senator Heath, but let's do this. We're, you know, what can we do? What agreement can we reach right here in front of everybody to, you know, break this impasse? And at that point he said, you know, I'm not discussing this with you. So it was over.
So a couple more questions for you here. A listener wants to know about a charge that I think was basically made by a Democrat senator. Is it Irene Aguilar, maybe, who suggested that the map was designed to dilute the Hispanic vote, perhaps to protect Diana DeGette from a primary? Have you heard anything about this?
I hadn't heard that, but I will say it's an accurate statement to recognize that all of the maps that the Democrats introduced significantly watered down the Hispanic influence in Congressional District 1. Right now, I'm just shooting from memory, it's up around 31%, and all of their maps, that is Hispanic percent, 31% Hispanic, and all of their maps dropped it down into the 28 range. When you go to, you have to add 56,000 people roughly to CD1, and the only way you can add people and not dilute the Hispanic population is to go over and grab parts of Aurora or go up into parts of Commerce City. And in both cases, we had public testimony where people were asking not to do that, but you can do a lot better job of respecting that community. And the Republicans did. And in our maps, we kept it in that 30 range. So from just 31 to 30 and not, I don't think that would be a substantial impact on their influence in the congressional district. But it certainly gave that appearance with their map.
So, and what about the question of Brandon Schaefer? You know, how much of this, and again, getting back to this idea of hoping maybe that the courts will split the baby, how much of this is the idea that maybe Brandon Schaefer wants to run for higher office?
Well, there's Brandon Schaefer, and then there's Morgan Carroll, two state senators who I think both have their eyes on higher office. It's no secret that Brandon wants to run for Congress. Heck, he was in the race against Marilyn Musgrave back in 2008 and got cold feet or got talked out of it by the Democrat power brokers. And I know he laments that. I think he believes deep in his heart he would have won had he been in, and no doubt he believes he would have even held the seat. So it's clear he wants to run for Congress pretty bad. I've seen a lot of attempts by the other side to draw maps that clearly benefit him over everybody else in the state. So it's obvious that the effort was put in there, and I'm pretty certain he's going to run. If he does, he'll end up running most likely against Cory Gardner, and he's going to get whipped.
So for some reason, I thought Brandon Schaefer was in the 2nd Congressional District. I thought he was from Boulder.
He lives in Boulder County, but he lives in Longmont, and Longmont has been in the 4th.
Okay.
And we had a ton of testimony from people that live in Longmont saying that they want to be kept in the fourth and that they're a community of interest with Greeley and Fort Collins.
Well, sure. I mean, and, you know, Jared Polis is a friend of mine, and I like him a lot, but boy, give me Cory Gardner any day as my congressman.
Yeah, that's the problem. The problem that Brandon Schaefer has in trying to spend public resources to draw a congressional district map that suits him is that he lives too close to Jared Polis, and for that matter, a little too close to Ed Perlmutter. So as you start trying to find Democrats to pack into that seat, which we saw on a lot of these maps, you start running into both of those guys' houses, and you don't want to, you know, reach around them and grab a bunch of their voters. So that's a problem that he has in trying to design a congressional district that suits him.
Thank goodness we only have to do this every 10 years. I mean, this is ridiculous.
It is. It's really interesting for a numbers nerd like me. I mean, I can sit here and tell you now how many people live in almost every county in the state of Colorado and even a lot of the towns.
Yeah, it is fascinating. The politics of it are fascinating, and it sort of makes you want to take a shower, though, after you talk about it. It's just so, it's sort of the worst of politics in a way. But, Greg, when we come back from this break, I want to do a quick legislative session wrap-up with you. Maybe you can give us some, you know, good, the bad, and the ugly of some things that got done in this past session, because it seems like redistricting has sucked all the news oxygen out of the room, and we haven't heard much about anything else. So stay with us right here on Backbone Radio. We'll be right back after these words with State Senator Greg Brophy. And coming up at 6 p.m., my interview of Paul Ryan. Stay with us. Welcome back to Backbone Radio. Let us go right back to our VIP line with State Senator Greg Brophy. We just spent some time talking with Greg about redistricting, and you know, for many of us, the news has been, the local news, other than the mayor's race perhaps, has been all redistricting all the time for several weeks. So I wanted to talk with you, Greg, about what else happened besides redistricting, or what else didn't happen besides redistricting during this past legislative session. Maybe you could just tell us a couple things that you thought that happened that were great, a couple things that were not so great, and a couple things that were just astonishing.
Well, a couple of things that were, you know, good or great is we repealed the bill that added sales tax on top of software downloads last year, plus the sales tax on ag chemicals and animal medicines. So those were great to take back two of the dirty dozen that passed last year. The House passed a repeal of the Amazon tax by something like 58-6. And then it died on purpose on the calendar in the Senate. The Democrats refused to calendar it in time to do a fair hearing in the Senate. I know. You know that the whole thing has been enjoined, that the courts think it's going to get thrown out completely. So they're not collecting a single solitary dime, but it was their baby. They are so wedded to the notion of taxing the internet that they wouldn't let the Senate have the hearing on that bill. So that was, you know, some of the good that we did that. And, you know, the kind of the medium stuff is that we balanced a budget in the state without any new taxing. Well, I like to say without any new tax increases. They did extend the sales tax on cigarette purchases. You know, cigarettes are like 50% tax and 50% product right now. So there was that. Not much in the way of, I can't remember any hidden fee taxes that were tacked onto the budget. So those types of gimmicks came to an end because of 33 Republicans in the House. So we did that constitutional deal. I got to tell you, if there was a history of the legislature kicking the budget over to the courts like they do redistricting, I kind of imagine that would have happened on the budget this year because of you know, the differences between the two chambers. It's a good thing that we can't do that, or that's never been done. Let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ugly things, and you know, you're interviewing Paul Ryan here later, and he's one of the guys who has enough guts to talk about getting into the entitlement programs. We had passed out of the Senate the first little tiny reform related to the entitlement of Medicaid or a Medicaid-like program, and it ultimately ended up dying or failing to get final passage because the Democrats refused ultimately to finish it, to bring it back up. And I'm really disappointed with that because, you know, the state of Colorado is not much different than the federal government. And, you know, we do balance our budget every year, but we do have obligations that are growing much faster than our revenue. And if we don't do some entitlement reform, we're going to find ourselves unable to fund the core functions of government like education and corrections. And I was so disappointed that we had it for a little while and then we lost it. It was such a modest step compared to what we have to do.
Right.
And you know, I fear for our nation too. If the Republicans lose the next election because Paul Ryan and his team were bold enough to actually work for entitlement reform and to suggest that we have to do it and to put it on the table, if the Republicans lose the next election because of that, then our country is doomed and we are going to go bankrupt.
So, Greg, we've got about 3 minutes left. I've got a question for you, and producer Matt has a question for you as well. Matt, do you want to ask Greg your question? Go ahead.
It's not working.
It's Matt. Okay, Matt's mic isn't working to get on the air. But what Matt wants to ask you about, what was going on with tacking on that payday loan bill onto the rules bill at the end of the session?
it was the entirely appropriate thing to do because there was a rule drafted up by the AG's office, I think, that made the payday loan folks repay the administration fee, the initial fee that they collect for doing these short-term loans, made them repay part of that fee if the loan was paid up or paid in early. And that wasn't the intent of the legislation. And a bill went through the House, passed fairly easily through the House to adjust that and change that to make sure that the law was clear. But it died in a committee in the Senate, of course, on a party line vote. And so the House Republicans attempted to right that wrong with what's called the rule review bill. We have an opportunity to make sure that all of the rules that are promulgated are in line with legislative intent and the statutes themselves. And we tried, but the Senate called the bluff of the House and said, we are not going to accept that. And Governor Hickenlooper sided with them. About the only bold step he made all year, he sided with the Democrats in the Senate and said, I will call a special session if this rule review bill doesn't pass, because it would have kicked out every rule written from November or December 1st, 2009 to November 30th, 2010. Wasn't the end of the world, but yeah. You know, it was probably not worth
it. So you think Hickenlooper actually did the right thing?
I actually think he did the wrong thing, but it was a
bold thing. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, and let's see. We got about a minute and a half left. Talk to us about Senate Bill 200, AME Care, as its detractors might call it.
Yeah, you know, it had become absolutely toxic policy, and I'm afraid that President Obama is going to come to Colorado and say, "See, even here, you know, we have bipartisan support through your legislature to do these health care exchanges. So clearly, Obamacare has, or health care reform, as he calls it, has support in Colorado, broad bipartisan support." It wasn't something that I voted for. It was something that we shouldn't have done at this time. It's actually not terrible policy to have a central clearing site that people can go to buy health insurance. I wish that the private sector would set it up, you know, an eBay for health insurance. That would be a great thing. It wouldn't be a bad thing to have the government do one and then ultimately hopefully kick it over to the private sector. But boy, at this time, I think Senate Bill 200 should not have been passed, and I'm disappointed that it was passed, and hope it doesn't come back to bite the Republicans in the future here.
I hope you're right. You know, to me, one of the main issues there, kind of like the idea of gay marriage, where the problem is as much in the rhetoric as anything else, like the word marriage, the fact that includes exchanges. If it had been called almost anything else, it would have been a lot better. Maybe still not better enough to deserve support, but it wouldn't have been the political disaster that I agree with you that it is now. State Senator Greg Brophy, thanks a lot for spending time on a Sunday evening with us here on Backbone Radio. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Always good to be on.
All right, see ya. So when we come back, After these words, you will hear my interview of House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan. It's very interesting. I encourage you to listen carefully, and we'll spend some time talking about it after the interview, so you can join the conversation then after the interview at 303-696-1971. Stay with us.